I don't know if we'll do another one of these or not, but this is part four. You tired, worn out, part four. But it's especially, to me, got a cough. You got a cough. He's got it. Because this hits home to me, because you don't know how many times I've been worn out. And as we go through this today, you'll see what I'm talking about, because it's tough. It's tough, guys, when you, I don't know, I shouldn't whine and complain, but I will. It's tough when you put in the hours that I put in for this. And, you know, I'm not a freelancer. I work. And then, you know, when I come up here, some people are like, well, how long you spend on this studying? Trust me, hours and hours and days and hours. And, you know, the response you get is, not from you guys, but, you know, other people, you know, they came through and went away and, you know, they don't like it. And you know, you think, well, what the heck am I doing here? I could, you know, if I wanted to be real popular, I could go preach what everybody else is saying and do things like they're doing. And I see this guy on Facebook, and I don't know why, I don't know who he is, but they're selling a book, 10 Ways to Grow Your Church. And he started out with 6 people, and within 6 months, he's got 200 people. And, oh, there's just these 10 easy steps. And trust me, it's been put to me to do these 10 easy steps. And if you'll just do this, and I say, you know what, if the gospel doesn't do it, I'm going to the house. Because it's all I got. It's all I got. I'm just an old hick hillbilly. Uncouth, I guess. Ain't smooth. Ain't got no hair to point up. Scraggly face. Working man's hands. You know, that's just who I am. Can't be nobody else. But, you know, it plays on your psyche sometimes. You know. And it does. It's like, well, is your church growing? And growing always means is a bunch of new people coming in. And, you know, that's easy for the eyesight. Is there a bunch of people coming in? Well, we had 20 new people today. We had 40 new people. We had 100 new people today. But for me, and for our conversations that we have with one another, I have grown tremendously in who the Lord is. And I believe you guys have too. And I think that's why we're getting more where we're unmoved, not tossed about with every wind of doctrine. I've heard some of you guys come in, and you know when it's false. See, before it could be blended in so easy, but now you know the difference. And I'm so thankful for that. I mean, you can spot it. It's the difference between smelling a skunk and smelling roses. You can tell right away which is which. But, you know, when you're early on, you don't know. You can tell. But it's easy to get depressed. It's easy to get worn out and frustrated through all of this. Well, always in the Bible, there's somebody else that's already been there. Already been there and done that. And the Holy Spirit said, we need to write that down. History. The people that don't want a history, they'll have to get rid of the Bible if they want a history. Because, you know, they want to get rid of all history. But here in the Bible, there's an old prophet named Elijah who went through the very same thing. He got tired and worn out. And that's what I want to look at. So I want to go to 1 Kings chapter 19. I'm going to start verse 12. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord went in the fire. And after a fire, a still small voice. And it was so when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face in his mantle, and he went out, stood in the entering in of the cave. And behold, there came a voice unto him and said, what dost thou here, Elijah? And he said, I've been very jealous for the Lord of hosts, because the children of Israel forsaken thy covenant, thrown down the altar, slain the prophets with the sword. And I only am left. They seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said unto him, Go, return on thy way to the wilderness of Damascus, when thou comest, anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. But you get the gist of it. He's in the cave. He's all by himself. He's the only one left, he thinks. Fires came by, earthquake, you know. Still small boys. You know, I've said this before. If I was writing the Bible, there are parts of the Bible I would leave out. I mean, if I'm going to tell a story about my hero, and, you know, Elijah's a pretty good hero, I might leave this story out. You know, I've often said this about David. I mean, why do I need to hear that David at 50 years old has an affair with Bathsheba and has her husband killed? You know, why not leave that part out? He's a man after God's own heart, but we gotta throw it in there. But I look at this, and it does me good to see that man, even old Elijah got down. Elijah, he had burnout right here. He's tired and worn out. The great prophet burned out. And you know what? Nobody would have expected it. You remember Elijah or Isaiah talking about the vigorous young men? You know, those men that you would have never expected? Elijah's one of them vigorous men. Nobody would have ever expected Elijah to burn out. He's the prophet. If y'all knew some of the walks I've had in this building up here and heard some of the things I said, y'all might not come listen to me anymore. But I read these stories, man, it does my heart good. I mean, I kind of know how Moses felt. But I mean, we read the Bible, and 40 years is three words. Moses spent 40 years in the desert. 40 stinking years all by himself. You know, nobody to preach to. All he's doing is keeping sheep. Moses, the great prophet Moses. 40 stinking years. I say stinking years, you know, because I got to give a little bit of 40 years. I hear other people talk about our church has been in business for 8 years. We have 14,000 people and we're just growing. I'm like, how long have we been up here? 7 years, 8 years? You know what I'm going to start doing? When people ask how many we got, I'm going to start counting the chairs. Or what I'm going to do is take all the chairs out and just hand them out as people come in, and I'm going to say, every seat was full. You got to think positive, Beth. You got to think positive. Every seat was full. Yeah, that's right. And we'll leave two chairs out so the last two people won't get chairs, and y'all can't sit over there no more. You have to take that bench down. And then I'll say, standing room only. Standing room only. The reason God puts these things, and I say it lightly, I can do that now, but I've struggled with it. But the reason God records these things is so that we know how to deal with it, how God dealt with it, and how to come out of it. I mean, every situation I find myself in, somebody done been there, done that. Been there and done that. And it's good for me. So if we're going to understand how Elijah got into burnout and how God dealt with it, we need to get a little brief instruction to what's going on here. What's taking place? What was the surroundings, the situation that led up to this? Well, you know, there's a king in Israel named Ahab. Ahab. Yeah, somebody started singing that. Yeah. Well, I want you to understand, this will be important as the story goes on. The Israel is split. 10 tribes are up north. The royal city is Jezreel. 2 tribes are down south. The 10 tribes up north are called Israel. The 2 tribes left down south around Jerusalem is Judah and Benjamin. And of course, the priests are there, but they were never counted. So you don't count the priests. So you got two tribes down south, Judah and Benjamin, and they're called Judah, the tribe of Judah. Benjamin's just swallowed up because of their little fiasco that happened back in the book of Judges. They're hardly nobody. So you got the king of Israel up north. Jezreel is their city. And the king of Judah down south. And Jerusalem is their city. So we're talking about the 10 tribes up north. Now, Ahab is the king of Israel, those 10 northern tribes. And they were a mess. Israel was a mess. Remember, they set up another calf. You thought the calf in Moses was the only calf. They set up another calf in the city of Dan because they didn't want to go down to Jerusalem to worship. They said it's too far, it's too much. So these people are full of idol worship. Now, Judah down south, they've kind of kept after a little bit of the covenant, but they're kind of in a mess too. But the 10 tribes up north, man, they're a wreck. So they've kind of long ago went after all these idols. Now, the king of Israel, Ahab, he marries this chick, right, named Jezebel. Now, right above the border of Israel, Israel's the northern tribe. It would be up where Lebanon is today. If you guys know where Lebanon, you guys are all thinking down here, aren't you? No, it's not this Lebanon. It's the Lebanon over yonder. But right to the north of that was a kingdom called Tyre. And Jezebel's dad is the king of Tyre. So you see this as a marriage, how they done it, to form a covenant between Israel and Tyre. So that's how they would do it, you know, when England and France and Denmark, they would try to marry their daughters off so that they would have covenants between the nations. So Ahab is going to marry Jezebel for this kind of covenant with the kingdom of Tyre. That's the worst thing he could have done, because Jezebel is character. She's a lot more than a queen waiting on a throne. She was the high priestess of Baal worship in Tyre. She was a witch. I mean, if you think, I mean, this is how she was a witch, full of devils. She was a fanatic for Baal worship, a fanatic for Baal worship. We've talked about Baal religion before. It was a filthy religion. When you would go to their temples, they had prostitutes there, and you had to be involved with the prostitutes in order to worship. And the prostitutes were both male and female. And so there was a lot of sexual disease. It was just filthy. You know, we talked about this before, the god Baal and his wife was Ashtaroth. You put those two together, and you guys want to know where the word Easter comes from? It comes from Ashtaroth. That's the Greek for Ashtaroth. And Ashtaroth was the, here they are worshiping fertility. What is our Easter symbol? Is it the cross? It's a stinking Easter bunny, which is a direct throwback to Ashtaroth and Baal worship. Now, when they started advertising on TV for Easter, they got a bunny on there that goes bok bok. They don't have a cross on there. They have a bunny on there. So that's where Easter comes from. So you see how intermingled our very country is today in the worship of Baal. I told you can go in every store you want and buy a lottery. The goddess of Fortuna is everywhere. Baal worship and Ashtaroth worship everywhere. Fastest growing religion in America is atheism. Jezebel is the high priestess of Baal. And in Tyre, she's it. She's it. When she marries Ahab, her only ambition is to bring the worship of Baal and Ashtaroth into Israel. She wants it to take over. Now remember, Israel, I mean, this is Israel. They got their name straight from Jacob, their fathers. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. God's covenant people here. And she's, her goal is to infiltrate. She don't care about Ahab. Her job is to infiltrate and bring about the worship of Baal and Ashtaroth on every city, every store, every marketplace in Israel. This is a setup from the beginning. I mean, you got to see here, she had a goal. She brings with her 450 of the best prophets of Baal there was to help promote, to go out. These were evangelists. These were evangelists. You know who our evangelists are today? Hollywood. Because every show you watch on TV, their message is behind it. The news, their message is behind it. They're the evangelists, the prophets of Baal. I just want you to get a picture of the story here and understand. Don't read it and leave it in the past. She wanted Israel to be completely under the control of Baal worship. It's amazing today how the news tries to do that to us right now, don't it? Now see, it was easy for her to do this all the time. Easily swayed. When you're easily swayed, you're not built on the rock. When the storms come, you're washed away. You're tossed to and fro. We don't know who's right. Or, you know, even the woman at the well comes to Jesus. Do we worship in this mountain? Do we worship over here? I mean, what kind of question is that? What do we do? Which church do we go to? Who's right? Turn on the radio. One preacher preaches 30 minutes. Turn it on. That the next 30 minutes, that preacher's against that preacher. And then you turn it on the TV and... So people say, well, I don't know what to believe. I'll just stay home. It's crazy. But here's Ahab. Now, Ahab couldn't care less about this Baal worship. He doesn't care. Ahab has his own agenda. And I'm going to tell you what Ahab, his agenda was like. Ahab's a moody guy. You know any moody people? Ahab, he just lived for today. He lived for pleasure. He loved his horses. I'll show you. I mean, he loved his horses. He loved to eat, drink, and be merry, and that's all he cared about. He didn't have a goal. He loved happiness. And he got very sulky and moody if he didn't want his boat to be rocked. You know what I mean? He'd get moody. Who cares about what's going on? All he cared about was his horses. Now Jezebel, on the other hand, a woman of passion. A woman with ambition. A woman who knew where she was going. She wasn't going to let nobody stop her. She is a fanatic. Kill anybody that got in her way. Oh, Naboth, he won't give you that vineyard? We'll do away with him, buddy. Nobody going to stop me. You know, I mean... Her mind always, she was conniving. You ever meet anybody conniving? Their mind is five steps ahead of yours. They done worked it out 10 different ways. Whatever you try to do, they're conniving. I hope y'all ain't referring to me. Let's see this cross room woman telepathy thing going on. I've been exposed. But she was five steps ahead. She never got moody because she was intense. She had a goal. You know what I mean? She was very spiritual, but her spiritualness was demonic. The wrong kind of spiritual. You know what I mean? Totally fanatic. Now, Ahab, he didn't have a spiritual bone in his body. Now, these two are married. Now, think about this marriage here. And it was arranged just so that they could be a league between Tyre and Israel. She brought the 450 prophets of Baal down there, paid for by King Ahab, come right out of the king's treasury. He didn't give a hoot. All he cared about is his horses are being fed. I'm happy. What are we going to have for dinner? Now, when Baal worship has just about taken over, remember, idol Baal on every hill, it's just about completely taken over. Anybody who was a true worshiper of God was hiding out in caves, or you didn't make it public, you know, you were in the closet, you come out, you know, you're going to be killed. The underground church, you know, a lot of countries, the underground. When I say the fastest growing Christian church in Iran, it's underground. Make no mistake, you don't go down in Mecca carrying your cross or your head will be cut off and all your family's head will be cut off. The church in China is underground. The church in Russia is underground. But they're thriving. The church in America is floundering. And we got all the freedoms in the world. But anyway, Baal worship is just about taken over. The true believers are underground. And out of the mountains of Gilead comes this hillbilly named Elijah. I love that. I don't know what kind of picture you get. But when I see Elijah in my brain, I don't know if you guys remember this. I'm going to check your age here. I bet Lauren don't, but I bet Neil does. I get a picture of Captain Caveman. Anybody know who Captain Caveman is? Neil going, yeah. Lauren's like, what are you talking about? You don't know who Captain Caveman is, do you? Dad, you'll have to explain it to her. I see Elijah, because remember Captain Caveman? He just, that's Elijah. Captain Caveman, hillbilly. Now this dude comes from the mountains of Gilead, goes straight to the palace up in Jezreel, walks straight into Ahab, and boom, here he is. And he says, according to my word, there'll be no rain, there'll be no dew until I say so. Boom, he's gone. Now imagine, I mean, these people are like, who the heck was that? Captain Caveman walking up here into the palace of Jezreel. Ahab, he don't care who comes in because he just cares about his horses. Jezebel's over there worshiping a fanatic, and here comes this caveman hillbilly looking dude and says, there ain't going to be no rain nor dew at my word till I say so, and boom, he's gone. He's gone. And you know, God told Elijah to go hide. He told him where to go. He told him to go hide. Now, for 3.5 years, miracles is in Elijah's life. Yeah, he goes down to the brook. Daggone crow brings him a ham sandwich with mustard every day. Imagine that. I would be down there and the crow would bring me a ham sandwich with mayonnaise on it, and I'd be saying, you expect me to eat that? It's got mayonnaise on it. Now, think about this. No rain, no dew, 3 years. I mean, no grass. The creek beds is dried up. Obviously, the people would be starving to death. Now, I told you about where I get these verses. Look at chapter 18, verse 5. After 3 years, there's a famine, sore famine. The scripture says in verse 2, sore famine. Now, here's Ahab, and Ahab said to Obadiah, go into the land and to all the fountains of water and to the brooks. You'd think, oh, Ahab is going to step up. He's going to start taking care of the people now. And he's really concerned about the people. Pre-adventure, we may find grass to save the horses and the mules alive, that we don't lose all the beasts. He ain't cared about the people. He cared about his stinking horses. I mean, you see what I mean? You don't care. 3 years of famine in the land, all he cares about is his mules going to have stuff to drink. Go search the land. I don't care. Steal from the people if you got to. Take it from the rich and give it to the poor. Who cares? And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, here comes Captain Caveman again, Elijah. He turns right up out of the blue 3.5 years later and challenges the prophets of Baal to a contest right up on top of Mount Carmel. Going to have a Super Bowl. That's what this is, Super Bowl, best two teams. We're going to have the God of Israel and the God of Baal. That's what we're going to do. We're going to have a Super Bowl right here on Mount Carmel. And they're going to call fire down, and whoever's God answers by fire, he's going to be God. Now, the prophets of Baal, they, because of all their fertility worshiping, they were like Pharaoh. They worshiped the sun. Well, the sun is killing them right now, scorching them to death. But if anybody could call down rain, you would think it would be the prophets of Baal, right? I mean, that's your God right there. Surely if anybody could call down the rain, man, it'd be you. So all the crowds gather around. Super Bowl's about to be played. All Israel, King Ahab's there. They're all there. So here goes the prophets of Baal. They go to dancing and a hooting and a hollering. I know what I get a picture in my mind what they're doing, but I ain't going to tell you. They're a hooting and a hollering and a dancing around. They start cutting themselves. Cutting themselves. They're bleeding all over the place and wallering in the floor and jumping and hooting and hollering. Trying to call down fire. All Israel's gathered around watching. You know, and they've been under Baal worship. True believers can't come out. And they're just expecting fire to come down, and we're all watching who's going to be God? Who's God's going to answer? Now Ahab's there, but he's kind of bored. You know, he's got front row tickets to the Super Bowl, and he don't even like football. All he's worried about is, am I going to have grass for the horses? What's going on? Maybe somebody will call fire down, and maybe some rain will come, and I can feed my horses. He don't really care. And as the day goes on, old Captain Caveman, he's been standing over there. And I kind of like him because he's a trash talker. Yeah, I like him. You know, when y'all don't know this because you ladies do another stuff. When we go out and we play cornhole, I'm talking trash to Jeff. You can't do no better than that. Wimp telling Neil, I'm a trash talker. Talk trash about Jeff playing a guitar. Like Jeff, you only know 2 chords. He just laughs. Yeah. Oh, Elijah starts saying, man, maybe he's asleep. Maybe you need to holler louder. Maybe he's on a vacation, you know. Maybe he took a vacation to the Bahamas. Maybe you need to send him a text. Send him a messenger, you know. When you look at this verse, let's see, where is this at? Oh, verse 18 and 27. To my scripture-wielding daughter. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked him. He's talking trash. He's an original trash talker. I like to talk trash to them other people. You ask my buddy old Jeff Arnold something, he can tell you some of the stuff that come at me, and I say, what? And boy, I just fly in the hell on it. But I want you to, and you can go search this out if you want. It says that it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is talking or he is pursuing or he's on a journey or peradventure. He sleeps and must be awakened. There's a little word right there. You see that word, pursuing? You know what that word means? It means he went into a private place. You know what the real Hebrew meaning is? Maybe he's over in the toilet. Yeah, that's what it means. Maybe he's over in the toilet doing some business. Now, is that not trash talking? Oh, Elijah's saying, maybe your God's over in the outhouse. Because he had to go to the bathroom. That's trash talking 101. I like Elijah Captain Cave, man. That's what I tell people. I mean, you can go look it out. That word pursuing. Yeah, that's what it means. Maybe your God's in the outhouse. Maybe he's over in the toilet. It's kind of funny, isn't it? Yeah. I like it. So this goes on all the way up to about, it's getting in the afternoon now. Well, Elijah is a prophet of God, and true worshipers, they knew, man, at 3 o'clock, we got to start getting ready for the evening sacrifice, right? Because at 6 o'clock, they knew this. So Elijah, he says, you know what, guys, enough's enough. Enough's enough. I've had it. It's time to put this to rest. So he builds an altar. And he says, well, you know what? This ain't good enough. I want you to go down to the Mediterranean. I want you to take 12 barrels or 4 barrels and go 3 times. And I want to make sure, because I know how they are. They'll say, man, it's kindling, and he secretly started a fire. We're going to soak everything on the altar. We're going to soak the altar. We're going to dig a trench around and fill it full of water. We're going to soak the sacrifice. We're going to make sure this thing. And I love what Elijah prays here in verse 36. And it came to pass at the time of the evening, or at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, what we've been studying, the burnt offering, at the very time, at 6 in the evening, they would put that thing on there. At 6 in the morning, they would put it on. We talk about this burnt offering. Then Elijah the prophet came near and said, the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. He didn't say Jacob. He says Israel. Covenant God here, and he calls on him. Let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Lord. Hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Lord God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again. Man, what a prayer. What a prayer. And the next verse. Then the fire of the Lord fell, consumed the burnt sacrifice, and the wood, and the stones, and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. Man, I'm just seeing. Think about if you just prayed, and this just happened. I'd be thinking, wouldn't you kind of get a little puffed up in your chest a little bit? Did you see what God, I just prayed and the fire came down. And not only that, the stones, the wood, the trench. Y'all better start paying attention to what I got to say. Tell y'all. I can just see it. And the people in verse 39, when the people saw it, they go to screaming and hollering. They're scared to death. Oh, my God, God, our covenant God, God, we heard his name a long time ago, Jehovah, the I am that I am. He really is God. They're screaming and crying. I mean, they're just tore up. They take a daggone 450 prophets of Baal down to the creek and execute every one of them. I mean, what a day. While they're down there, Elijah hears something. He hears something. He said, man, I hear the sound of the abundance of rain. Whew, this day is going on, man. We've had the Super Bowl trash talking. Your God's on the toilet. We've killed 450 prophets of Baal. Fire has came down. It's been drought for 3.5 years. And now I hear the sound of the abundance of rain. So he goes up on the hill. He goes up on the peak here at Mount Carmel. And he begins to pray. Now he's heard something, but he ain't saw nothing. So, but he hears, and he prays, and he gets up, and he looks, nothing. Prays again, looks, nothing. Does this 7 times, and what's he see? Finally, he sees a cloud about the size of a man's hand. Oh, man. I think about that cloud all the time. I've been told a whole lot about this cloud, but I'm telling you, that cloud is Jesus. I've heard it said all kinds of things, but it's Jesus. It's a picture of the cross here. I mean, it's the whole thing. Now, he turns around. Here, I'm kind of skipping through here. And in verse 44, and it came to pass the seventh time that he said, behold, there arises a cloud out of the sea. Go up and say to Ahab. Now, Ahab's still there. What a weirdo. He's still there. I guess he's trying to figure out what's going on. Maybe he's slow to go back because he's going to have to tell his wife that all her prophets got executed by this dude. I don't know. Or maybe he just don't give a hoot. But he goes to Ahab and says, go, say to Ahab, prepare thy chariot and get down that the rain stop there. In other words, run for your life. That's what he's telling Ahab. Run for your life. Head back to the city of Jezreel. Go quickly. Don't let the rain stop you, because if you get caught in this storm, it might wash you away. That's what he's saying here. Now, it's 17 miles back from Mount Carmel to Jezreel, the royal city. 17 miles. Now, you would know Ahab. He's the king. He's going to have the best of the best of the best, right? He's going to have the big stud horses. Elijah outruns him. From Mount Carmel, 17 miles, Captain Caveman, I can just see Captain Caveman striding by. And there's old Ahab saying, what was that? And there goes Elijah, 17 miles, headed back to the city of Jezreel. Now, you got to understand, this storm came up out of the Mediterranean. This is a storm. Sky's black, lightning, thunder, rain is coming. This ain't no gentle rain. This is a dadgone tsunami rainstorm pelting them alive. I mean, this is a furious hurricane kind of storm. I mean, you ever think about that? I mean, what a day Elijah had. Talk about success. Talk about how to start a church. My gosh. Shows up, walks into king's house. No rain at my word. Drought. Miracles in his life for 3.5 years. Shows back up on the scene. Let's have a Super Bowl party. Let's see who's God. Maybe your God's in the outhouse. I don't know. Let's build an altar, cover it full of water. Fire comes down, kill 450 people. I heard rain, I saw rain, and you guys doubt me, go outside and look. It's a daggone flood out there. Pretty good first day. I mean, surely word of his great ministry would spread like wildfire. Surely, quickly throughout all Israel, every Baal temple and idol would be thrown down and the people would rise up and return to worship God. Wasn't this what they wanted in the nation here a few weeks ago when they had all their prayer? They wanted it. And what happened? I bet you don't even remember what day it was. You know what I mean? Hundreds of thousands of people show up and Washington, D.C. to pray on the Capitol steps and to pray and all this, and we're going to turn and all and nothing. But here's Elijah. Great day. He's thinking, surely Jezebel's going to have to bow down now. I mean, this is going to be awesome. By the time Elijah gets back, I mean, the rain is storming, it's coming down. Ahab, he makes it back, second place, as always usual. Walks into the king's castle, fixes him a martini. Horses is all wet. Please take the horses down to the barn, dry them off. Goes into Jezebel. Had a very interesting day at Mount Carmel today. Because she wasn't there. And by the way, sorry about your 450 prophets. Captain Caveman killed them all. Not one or two of them, killed every one of them. And it's very interesting when you read the story, it says that Ahab told them all that Elijah had done. Not, he didn't say God did it. He said all Elijah had done. All that Elijah had done. Now, old Jezebel, remember I told you how, what kind of person she is, conniving? Her brain is thinking five steps ahead. She's the queen witch of Baal, and it doesn't matter to her that she's been proven wrong. We're not going to have that. She only cared that Elijah has broke the back of Baal worship in Israel. So in her rage, she sits down and she writes a letter. I always have these songs. My baby, she wrote me a letter. So she writes Elijah a letter. And it's a blood covenant oath. Here's what it is. Because she says, by this time tomorrow, you're going to be dead. And it's a covenant oath because if you're not dead, I will be. Because I'm going to spend all of my power to make sure you're dead. Even if it kills me, you will be dead. Now, I want you to understand here in this story that, you know, we don't have a resurrection body yet. We still get tired. I was telling him last night, I was so tired. Now think about Elijah's day. He's just confronted a nation. Now think about that. All this adrenaline. He's confronted a nation. He's confronted the state religion. The state religion is Baal. He stood there alone. A man against a nation. He's mocked the priest. He's built the altar. They've covered it with water. He's had his prayer. The rain. The execution of the 450 priests. Their 17-mile run outrunning the king's chariot. Now it's all over. End of the day. The rain has come. And I know at a time like this, you can feel exhausted, drained. And I can remember. I can just remember. I know coming out of some of the best meetings I thought I ever had. And it seemed like an hour later, I would say, is this it? Is this all? I don't know if you've ever said that, but you're like, if this is the best, you're just, it's hard to explain, but Elijah's drained emotionally, physically, and at his lowest point, knock on the door, for all your good deeds today, the Queen of Israel says, you're going to die. And by this time tomorrow, you'll be dead. Wow. Well, let's give him a standing ovation. You would have thought all Israel would have come to his rescue, but no. That's how the day ended for Elijah. You'll be dead. Now, if you read this story, you'll understand this is the only time in Elijah's life recorded that he did not listen for God. He just reacted. And when you react out of your own flesh, out of your own human nature. And I can tell you this, the one and only result will always be the same. Fear. Always. Fear. Without a doubt. Fear. And in reality, this was Jezebel's only, this was a shot in the dark for her. She was trying to scare Elijah because she knew she had lost. She lost all of her prophets. She knew all Israel would turn on her. God of Israel has already answered. There's the mood of a great revival in Israel. And they'll turn on her. And I mean, this was a shot in the dark, man. Maybe I could send a message out to scare Elijah and he'll back off. And I can gain my momentum back. But with that letter, man, and here Elijah, she got back in control. If Elijah had just listened for God. When I say listen for God, you know what I'm saying by that? He could have drawn upon that God strength, on that God wisdom. There would have been no chance for Jezebel. You remember when Elijah showed up the first time and he says there'll be no rain, no dew at my word, and God told him to go hide. But this time God didn't tell him to go hide. He didn't tell him to get out of Jezreel and go hide. Because there's more for Elijah to do. Mount Carmel was only the beginning. The cross was only the beginning. There was still resurrection. There was still outpouring of Holy Spirit. There was still preaching of the gospel. Way more to do. Elijah was to carry that all over Israel, man. But he reacted out of his own flesh. Didn't react out of the Spirit of God. Elijah was afraid of Jezebel and he ran for his life. You know, there's a word there in verse 9, chapter 19, verse 3, and when he saw that, he arose and went for his life. He saw that. He saw it. You know what we're talking about with fear? Faith, fear, faith. Faith is a matter of seeing too. Fear is a matter of seeing. What do you see? Many times the Lord asked the prophet, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see, the storm, or do you see Jesus? Faith looks to God. Fear looks at the situation. Fear reacts to the situation with fear and anxiety. And that's all Elijah saw. He didn't see God. He saw the ladder. Now Jezebel becomes bigger than God. Bigger than Israel. Bigger than the 450 prophets. Bigger than the rain. Bigger than the fire. That's all he could see. You remember Peter? Peter walking on the water. What did he see? Jesus. All he saw was Jesus. He walks on the water. Who knows how far he walked? He took his eyes off Jesus and saw the storm. Save me, Lord, or I perish. What do you see? What do you see in everything? What do you see in the election? What do you see in everything? What do you see? And it's important. We, you know, walk by faith, not by sight. Let me give you a verse. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 27. Now this is Moses, that other crazy guy we talked about. Listen to this. By faith, he forsook Egypt. Now by faith. Now think about what he saw. Not fearing the wrath of the king or Pharaoh, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Wow. Moses had his eyes on something that nobody else could see. By faith. So here's Elijah. Got this letter. He's up in Jezreel. He's way up north there. He's up in Jezreel. And he decides to run for his life. And he heads south. Well, what's south? Judah. Well, they had a king down there, King Judah. Guess who his wife was? His wife was the daughter of Jezebel. Who? Out of the pot, into the fire. Can't stop in Judah. I mean, how stupid can you get? So, she was a witch too. I mean, this was the state of Israel. I mean, Jezebel herself and Israel, her daughter is married to the king down south. Pretty rough. So he goes through Judah and he goes down to the edge of the desert. And he tells his servant, he left his best friend, his servant behind. This is how being burned out will do. I mean, he kicks his servant to the curb. Last friend he had. I mean, he's got this mindset, woe is me, Jezebel's won. And I mean, this is what he does. And Beersheba, that's he came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and left his servant there. And he went a day's journey into the wilderness. Now listen to this, how he prays in verse 4, chapter 19, verse 4. So he's done all this. And yeah, I mean, yesterday he's a hero. And this morning he's a zero. And he went himself a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree and requested for himself that he might die. I mean, how stupid. You know, if he really wanted to die, all he had to do was stay in Jezreel. Jezebel would have done that. She done swore she's going to kill him. I heard, a preacher friend of mine was talking. He would go to the hospital and pray for these people. And this one lady, everything was terrible. Oh, I just wish the Lord would go ahead and take me home. Wish the Lord would, my back's hurting, my sciatica's hurting, and everything hurting. And they got tired of it, so Lynn said, okay. So he started praying. He said, Lord, we pray that you would just kill her and take her home right now. Well, she raised up out of the bed. What are you doing? So I know if you pray for me like that, why not pray for me to get better? Well, I'm just following your request. See, old Elijah, he done got down depressed. If he really wanted to die, all he had to do was stay up there in Jezreel. So he goes this long journey, and now he's out in the wilderness, and his only prayer is, just kill me. Just kill me, Lord. He requested for himself that he might die. And he said, it's enough now, Lord. Take away my life, for I'm not better than my father's. You know, God didn't answer that prayer. We pray stupid stuff sometimes. Instead, God did the opposite. Gave him sleep and gave him food. I mean, I could just hear it in his prayer. God, you know, I'm it. The whole weight of your kingdom is upon me. Nobody in Israel came to help. I stood against the Baal worship by myself, killed all the prophets by myself. I've done it all for your kingdom, for your glory. Nobody gives a hoot, so you might as well just kill me. Woe is me. I know it's kind of funny now, but I prayed all of Elijah's prayers. Lord, nobody cares. Nobody gives a hoot. If Jeff could just learn three more chords, we'd have more people. Oh, Elijah, in his depression, he said, you know, if I die, it'll teach him a lesson. That'd be good. Just let me die. Bunch of cowards. Nobody's zealous up here but me. I'm the only one. You know, I'm the only one who spends 10 hours studying. I'm the only one, Lord, nobody else. And they get their sermons offline and they go get them out of a stinking book. They got all the programs and they do everything. And I spend 10 hours to come up here and give 1 hour. Nobody cares. Nobody appreciates it. See, that's the fuel of burnout. And then he says, I'm no better than my father's. So I wonder why he makes that little statement right there. I'm no better than my father's. Now, who was I told you? He was Captain Caveman. He lived up in the mountains of Gilead. Everybody up there is a shepherd. These are just common farmer folks. Elijah had a dream of being better than his dad's. He wanted to get out. He wanted to be successful. He wanted to do it in the name of the Lord. He wanted to make a mark for God's kingdom out into the world. And now look, I'm no better than them. All they are stinking sheep herders. No better than them. What a waste of time. He's worn out. Too much opposition, too much strife. He stumbled. Remember, that's where we started back in Isaiah. Remember, he stumbled. They'll stumble, and they'll stumble badly, and they'll fall. Now here's Elijah stumbling badly. The guy that Captain Caveman, we figure, would never wear out, would never burn out. Vigorous, but he's stumbled badly. He's failed. And you know why? Because he didn't wait on the Lord. Because Isaiah tells us, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength or gain new strength. And you remember I told you the word wait meant to be bound together, be binded together like as cord wrapped together. Those that wait on the Lord will be bound together with the Lord and will exchange their strength and put on His strength. But instead, Elijah is fainting. He's got the attitude, I quit, who cares? He just had the meeting of a lifetime, and the end result is, who cares? Take my life, Lord. And what does he do? Remember, he's tired and worn out, all that big day, and then running, and he's done traveled from Jezreel all the way to Beersheba, now he's out in the desert. And what does the Lord do? See, the God that I grew up serving would have said, you're a backslider, right? Elijah the backslider. Now I've got to cut you out, send you to hell, or scourge you, or just beat you to death. I've got to take stuff from you. You must be punished. But he lets him sleep. I believe I read in the scriptures where he gives his beloved sleep. You know, sometimes you just need a rest. Sometimes you just need a rest. I've got to get busy for the Lord. You know what? The best thing you can do is go home and sleep for about 12 hours and just rest. You remember even Jesus, we got in that boat to go across the lake to get away from the crowds. God here in his great anger for Elijah sends an angel to bust him up. No, he sends a cooking angel. Y'all know there's a cooking angel. Elijah wakes up out of a sleep and he smells something cooking on the fire. Angel food. God just, he's amazing, isn't he? I mean, you would think this would have been a great time for God to leave, but I mean, this is the God. God made his own promises. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. He's the covenant God. So, he gets up and he goes in the strength of that meat there, and he goes on down to another place called Mount Horeb. That's about 200 miles away, and he walks for 40 days. Now you might not think much of it, but I want you to understand, Elijah's Captain Caveman. He's a shepherd. He knows about walking. And we were talking the other day about a Fitbit. I know about walking and running. That's all they did. They didn't have cars. Only the kings and a few rich people had the chariots. So everywhere they went, they walked. And guys, you can walk 10 miles a day easy. Very, very easy. Well, it's 200 miles. That's 20 days tops. It takes him 40 days. I mean, this guy is meandering around. He's out in the desert. Now, I want you to understand, he's in the stinking desert. You guys ever go to the beach in July? You can't walk on the beach because your feet's burning? He's in the desert. His feet is burning. Sand is everywhere. The sun is belting down on you, especially on my bald head. I mean, it just tells you the mindset of Elijah. And he comes to this cave in Mount Horeb. Now there's many caves in Mount Horeb, but the scripture says he comes to the cave. I know the King James will say a cave, but if you go on and read it in the literal translations, many others, it's the cave. Why would it say the cave? The cave is a specific cave. When I say go cut a tree, I don't care which one, but go cut the tree, then there's a specific one. He came to the cave. It's the one and only cave. It's the very cave that Moses went to when he was up on the rock, up on top of the mountain of Mount Horeb, and said, I want to see your glory. And the Lord put him in a cleft of the rock. He put him in a cave, the cave. It's this same cave. And the Lord's glory passed by. Moses is up there to intercede for the people on behalf of Israel, plead for the people that he loved. Why is Elijah in this same cave? Elijah ain't interceding for nobody. He's there complaining. Same cave. Now look at this. I'm going to go back to verse 9. Remember, we started in verse 12, but I'm back up to verse 9. He arose and did eat and drink and went into the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights until Horeb, the Mount of God. That was verse 8. Verse 9, and he came thither into a cave, the cave, and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said unto him, what doest thou here, Elijah? I mean, why are you here, Elijah? You're not supposed to be here. I didn't tell you to get here. You're supposed to be back up there in Jezreel. Nobody told you to leave. You did all this on your own. Why are you here, Elijah? So Elijah, he says, by God, I'm going to answer. I've been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel, for the children of Israel forsaken that covenant, thrown down the altars, slain the prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And you know, when I'm thinking, when I'm reading this, I'm thinking, good grief, Elijah. After all you've been through, everything that's happened, 40 days in the desert, and he's still saying the same thing. He sounds like a broken record. When are you going to stop whining? You ever tell somebody sometimes? Dad used to say that sometimes. Stop crying, or I'll give you something to cry for. What the heck? I'm duped either way. My only option, and I get a picture of Captain Caveman here, because you ever seen somebody that's had the sniffles? And I can remember, like, when I was young, like, you know, when you're 20 and you can't, that was a little joke. but you ever remember when you don't want to cry? I don't know, maybe it's a guy thing, but you don't want to cry, but you can't help it, it's just coming, and you're trying to hold it in, you kind of got the sniffles, you know. And they're staring at you. Stop crying. I want to stop, but my whole body is doing it. That's what I think Elijah. He's just whining and complaining. It's only me, God. I mean, you don't know. You don't know how tough it's been. You don't know, God. I'm the only one out there left, and everybody has left, and I'm the only one, God, and I'm sick of it. That's Elijah in the cave. I'm sick of it, God. You told me that. I'm telling you. Nobody cares. Now I want you to notice, God don't get mad at him. God is not mad at Elijah. There's no condemnation with God. He's wonderful. It's not, I'm telling you guys, it's not wrong to tell God how you feel. I wish more people would believe me here. It's not wrong to tell God how you feel. I mean, Paul says we can come boldly to the throne of grace. Boldly means with absolute freedom of speech. You can absolutely tell God, hey, I grew up where you didn't tell God. You didn't talk to God that way. You better come in, waller in the floor, show some respect and hoot and, you know, do all of this other stuff. It still breaks my heart that, you know, a dear, precious lady lost her son to suicide. And her only thing was, well, I know we can't answer God. Or we can't ask God. I mean, who else are you going to turn to if you can't turn to God about losing your own son to suicide? How are you supposed to deal with that? But that's the religion of the day. But here Elijah, man, just he's poured his guts out. Now, God knows. I mean, you know, God was with him the whole time. He never left him or forsake him. So he knows all he's been going through. But still yet, God takes the time to ask. Sometimes you wonder why God asks, if God knows everything, but yet he still wants to speak and says, why are you here today? Like, I wasn't expecting you. I mean, it's not like you get a surprise guest at the house. Well, we wasn't expecting you. Like God says, Elijah, I've been looking everywhere for you. Oh, found you in your cave. What are you doing here? No, he knew. But he's prompting Elijah. He asked, tell me about Elijah. And you know when you talk to the Lord, I want you to, I don't know how else to say it. There's a lot of yuck in us. And it's full of feelings, it's full of emotions, full of poison. But that's not the real you. But it's buried under all the yuck and the muck. And sometimes we got to get the yuck and the muck out to get down to the real you. And here, and you know, Elijah, he tells God exactly how he feels, you know. I've did all this, guys. He says, God, I do feel like you left me. I mean, that's what he's saying. I mean, he ain't up here saying, I know thou must have said thou. He says, you know what, Lord, I feel like you let me down. I feel like, if you know, I would have done things different. I don't understand. I mean, we had it going. And then it changed. God, I feel like you left me. And it hurt me. It hurt me. I mean, you guys ever read the Psalms? I mean, David just pours it out on the Lord sometimes. I'm telling you what, guys, worn out, anxiety. If you want to know, I mean, all your anxiety will begin to leave when you tell the Lord. I mean, this is part of our mask that we hide. We try to hide. Well, I can't really tell the Lord that. I'll just keep that one. And it didn't work that way. I mean, we gotta do it. And you know what the Lord did? You know what the Lord's reply was? It was like the same reply when the glory passed by Moses. God had to put him in a rock. Elijah sees the power of God. Listen, and he said, go forth and stand upon the mountain before the Lord. In verse 11, behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind ripped through the mountains. I mean, a dead-gone tornado is coming down through the valley, picking rocks up and just smashing them and bashing them. And I mean, get this, the sound and the rushing of this wind. They began to break the rocks. But the presence of the Lord wasn't in the wind. And then an earthquake, I mean the very mountain, he's in the cave, and all of a sudden the whole mountain is swaying, the ground under your feet is rocking and reeling. But the presence of the Lord wasn't in the earthquake. And then all of a sudden he's looking out of the door and down in the valley. He sees lightning and fire rolling up and just bashing into the rocks and rolling everywhere. I mean, this is kind of what happened in Exodus when Moses was up there. I mean, don't touch that mountain. We've come to this mountain. Oh, Lord, don't touch it. This thing is rocking and rolling. This is the power of God in this mountain. You know, Hebrews says you've not come to the mountain that you couldn't be touched. This mountain with black tempest and all this other stuff. Same glory. And now here's Elijah. He's up in there in this mountain. Elijah's seeing the raw power of God. But I want to tell you something. The raw power of God, God's raw power is not his glory. It's not his weight. Right? That's not what gives him weight. Moses wanted to see it. Moses really wanted. Moses' question was, God, I really want to see who you are. When he said, I want to see your glory. Why, how do you get all this weight, this respect? Oh, God, I really want to know who you are. And when God passed by, what did he see? Moses saw that his name is loving kindness. His goodness passed by. Loving kindness. Moses saw a love that will not let you go. That's what he saw. He saw his glory. Wasn't in the rocks. Wasn't in the earthquake and then the fire. And then all the other stuff everybody wants to see. It was in his loving kindness. And you know, when I look out in creation, you see all this, let there be light. All this creation is wonderful. But what is it that gets you? What is it that just brings you to your knees? I was telling somebody the other day, you know, people, they don't really think sin is that big of a deal. You know, there's a verse that says he tasted death for every man. Do you realize that your sin means you should die? But we want to say it's not very hard. I mean, I thank God I'm not like them, because my sin doesn't really require death. My sin could be paid for with a kidney stone. My sin could be paid for with a dead battery in my car at an inconvenient time, right? Because we'll say the devil got me, or God has punished me, or God has given me a bad day. No. See how stupid we get? So when do I really see his loving kindness? When I see that innocent man, Jesus, nailed to a cross. Yeah, thank God he did it for the world. But thank God he did it for me. That's when I see the real loving kindness of God against the backdrop of everything that I have done. Not as a nation, not as a people, me. Me. Elijah has saw the raw power of God out there, and now comes a gentle whisper, a still, small voice, a whisper, a still, small voice. You know, now think about this. I mean, do you realize that still, small voice is Jesus? Is Jesus. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And that still small voice became flesh and dwelt among us. The very glory of God manifested in the flesh, in the person of Jesus Christ. See all, everybody wants the fire and the lightning and the earthquakes. Nobody wants loving kindness. Nobody wants gentleness. That's who Jesus is. That's who meets with Elijah. And Elijah in verse 13, and Elijah realized, this is the voice of the Lord. I know, that's him. And so Elijah, when he heard it, he gets up and he takes his coat, his mantle, and he wraps it around him, and he went out and he stood in the entering of a cave there. He's standing there in awe, and he's standing there in worship and in humility. And now the question comes again, what doest thou here, Elijah? What do you think Elijah said? Broken record. I've been very jealous for the Lord. I've done it all for you. They've thrown down the altars and killed the prophets, and I'm the only one left. Is anybody, don't nobody care about me? What have you, Lord, don't anybody care about me? I've had such a rough day, and you don't even understand. I mean, you would think the little light bulb would go off in Elijah's head, but he's too busy whining and grumbling and complaining. Now, you would think on the second time, the Lord would say, that's it. I've gave you one chance, I've gave you two chances, and now you still come at me with the same nonsense. You're out of here, Elijah. You backslider. Get out of Dodge. I'm wiping your name out of the book. I mean, this dude's mad. Captain Caveman is mad. He wants Israel condemned, right? He wants them busted up, condemned. But you know what God says? Elijah, I'm not into that. You can have your tornadoes and try to kill everybody, but the Lord's not in that, Elijah. It's not how I operate. Elijah, I'm in the gentleness. I'm in the sound of a still, small voice. The grace of God, the compassion of God. I just want to tell you this real quick. We call God our Father in the Spirit, and rightly so, but do you realize He's the ultimate mother? I mean, He's called El Shaddai. That means the breasted one. You know, when he made Adam in his image, Adam was both male and female. And when he put Adam to sleep, he took the female part out. But Adam was both male and female in the image of God. So God is both mother and father. He's the ultimate father. He's the ultimate mother. I you know, it's a stupid illustration, but if you haven't seen it, go watch The Shack. This day you need a father. The other day you needed a mother. And we need both of those. We need both of those. And he's it. God, a nursing mother. Why is a nursing mother? Because, as Jesus said, a bruised reed. I'm telling you what. And if any dads are in here, you know, moms can heal wounds a whole lot better than dads. You know what we do on the railroad when you get cut? Put some black tape on it. You'll be all right. Spit on it. You know, that's how we do it. Ask Neil, he'll tell you. Just rub some salt in it. You'll be all right. When you're really hurt, you want mommy. You want mommy. Because dads will say you need to toughen up. He's the ultimate mother. A bruised reed, or a broken reed. I mean, think about all of that. Smoking flax. I mean, he's so tender. So gentle. And I'm going to finish right here. God could have thrown Elijah under the bus. Still whiny, broken record. Still don't get it. Still mad, full of complaints. But God says, you know what, Elijah? I still got something for you to do. I want you to head back up to Carmel. Or I'm not going to send you back to Mount Carmel. You're not ready for that. Where's he sending? He said, I want you to go down to Damascus. Got a couple kings I want you to go anoint. Out. I want you to go down and find this other guy named Elisha. Don't worry, I've already been talking to him. Just go down, throw your coat on him. He'll know. Remember you left your best friend? I'm going to give you another one. His name's going to be Elijah. And by the way, I just want you to know, Elijah, you thought you was the only one. I've got 7,000 out there. You don't know who they are, but I've got them everywhere, just as zealous as you. And it's going to be okay. And suddenly everything's back on track. The revival's going to continue on through Elisha. Israel was going to be converted. I mean, do you see? I mean, he just brought everything back. Elijah is going to return to being the great prophet. What do you mean, the great prophet? The great prophet, not only to go into heaven by way of a chariot and flaming horses and not even have to die, but also the very prophet that will represent all prophets up until Jesus, and the very prophet to meet with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. So don't worry, Elijah. I got you. It is okay. When I read these stories and I think, it's easy to get swept up into it. Oh, what's going to happen to America? What's going to happen to the church? What's going to happen? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. It is. The Lord says, would you just chill a minute? I have got this. And it is going to be all right. You know? So when we go through and all this other stuff, just remember that. We listen to the Lord. Wait upon the Lord. Be bonded together with the Lord, which we already are. Take His strength. Take His wisdom. When we do that, there's no chance for burnout. No chance. When I read those stories, guys, it does me so much good. And you know what would be better? I would give the Lord a little advice. If He could just tell me sometimes, instead of making me have to live it, and then going back and find the story to relate to what I've been going through, I know, Denise, and I wished he would. Denise said, he don't do it that way. I'm going through what's going on, and then when I'm coming out of it, and it's like, oh, and go read about Elijah. Oh, Dad, come on, why didn't you say go read about Elijah 3 weeks ago? But you know what? It sticks with you. And always remember this. When thou art converted, strengthen the brethren. That's why sometimes we go through what we do. So we can tell people. And I always used to hate when people would say, it'll be all right. I hated that. I'm a mechanical kind of guy. How is it going to be all right? What are the events that's going to take place necessary to make it all right according to what I've already worked out in the brain? And you know what? Those two, they don't always match up. I don't think they ever match up. But I know it'll be okay. Anyway, I'll put it right there.